Thank you, ma'am.
You can ask them to bring. Come.
I can ask. It would be nice if you could come up a little further, and I'm going to sit down today. She talked me into it. Yes, it is a good idea. You hate to recognize you're getting old. Okay, let's just bow our heads. Father, as we have the lesson today, would you give us the wisdom and understanding that we need? We pray that you'll bless each one of them here, Lord, in thy name. Amen. Now, from our sermon this morning, we learn about meekness and being under control, that kind of thing. And sometimes you say, well, if I'm going to be meek, and I have to let sort of everything go by, how can you make it? Well, the fact is we don't really need to let everything go by. With a meek heart, you can still confront people. And this is the thing that we really need to know and understand. I think today people find it very difficult to confront one another. Very difficult to even husband and wife sometimes. They don't know how to confront each other. And maybe because they don't know how, the way they do it just adds on to the fuel onto the fire. So I feel this is very important. Learning how to confront, how to restore troubled relationships. I've taught this maybe when we started out, probably, because I do have one there, but I've taught it all over. But I really feel that this is one of the areas that I wished that we could really get under it and understand it and be able to learn how to confront with meekness, but still with strength. You know, another definition is for meekness is having strength under pressure. See, meekness is not easy. It's easier sometimes to blow up. But meekness is being able to let things go on, and you listen calmly, and you take it in, but you're not going to have a fight over it. You're just going to hear it. And what this is to me, the sense that if God can help you to conquer this, and he can, I know. And as we pray, you see, sometimes we feel like, that's me. That's how I am. I've been that way all my life. Sure you have. You've never confronted it. You've never looked at it and said, well, you know, I'm gonna be different. But Jesus said that he can help us. This is what the Holy Spirit, this is part of the working of the Holy Spirit. And that is to help us, to counsel us, to be beside us, to whisper in our ear, that's not very good. And your heart, to let your heart know, that's not very good as a child of God. And so he wants to do this. But you have to understand that God will never do it halfway. You see, many times our prayers are halfway prayers. Lord, I need help. I need help. They're sort of a halfway prayer, you know. You're hoping to help you, but you still want to do it. You know, that kind of thing. But what we need to do is really get to the place where we can say to God, I really have to have your help. I need your help. You know, in counseling, I have learned that this is the only way people will ever get help from a counselor, is when they really want it. Otherwise, they'll come to you. Oh, I have something. They'll come and they'll start. You give them a you know, trying to help them. Oh, no, this is what I do, you know. Or this, I don't think. And the whole time, they're fighting against you instead of really working along with you. They have their ideas. They have their opinions, and they don't want to change them. So there's not any way that you can really help those kind of people. So that's what happens when you say, but God doesn't help me. God will help anyone who comes, like he said, with a mourning heart, with a heart that says, Lord, I really need your help. I don't want to be like this. And as you pray and as you, in your own self, you see, God doesn't want to make us a robot. When he forgave us and came into our heart, he didn't want us to be a robot. He wanted our love, our love to him. He wanted our obedience to him. And so actually, this is, he says, you have to do some things. Paul said, you have to put these on. You have to take this off. So when we go into something like this, God doesn't push a button and change us. He has in his own love made a way of maturing us, because we can't take a whole lot at one time. And so it's a gradual thing when I begin to pray, and then I begin to notice that, you know, I'm thinking about it more. And then think, oh, I shouldn't do this. So this is what we need to do, wholeheartedly come to him. Because when we confront, we can heal by confronting. Really. You know, when I confront, we fight. Well, no, that's not what it's for. Confronting is the act of encountering a person. That means face to face, or maybe phone to phone, I don't know. I'm not sure it's texting to texting. But anyhow, face to face, encountering a person in order to expose what is wrong, with the goal of establishing truth. Now, when you have arguments, you're trying to tell them you're wrong, and they're trying to tell you you're wrong. So this is not comfort. This is not really healing confrontation. This is war. This is a fight. This is a battle. But when we go with that spirit of understanding that my goal, my motive, is that we can establish the truth and that they can understand, or maybe I need to understand, whatever it is, that we're going to get healing from this. You see, the method of confrontation that Jesus used, we could do some of that too. Now you have someone that has been talking about you and it's not true. You feel like it's not true what they're saying. Sometimes you have to be careful, because sometimes what they're saying is true, but you don't want to admit it. But anyhow, you know it's not true, and you really want, so you go to them. Jesus did several times, many times, he confronted people, but you never saw him have a fight with them. There was very little bit of arguing, if any. There was no arguing, usually, unless he was trying to explain to them. So sometimes he came with a question. God comes with a question. So when we're confronting a person, we may ask them, you know, does this happen? You know, I don't want to take it from other people. Now, they like that. When you go to them and say, I don't want to believe this. I don't really want to take what those other people said. I want to come to you and say, did you say this? Well, they're either going to say, well, maybe not the way they said it, or you know, or they may say, oh no, they lied through it. But at least it's one way of going without coming with a baggage on us that's ready to chip on our shoulder. We ask them, did you do that? You see, this is, I don't know why we find it so hard to face each other, but we do. We'll talk about that a little later. But anyhow, another method did he have was he confronted with a parable. He would tell them a parable. A parable is just a short fiction story that has a good moral. I think that this is what David, when Nathan went to David after he sinned, and he said to David, he said, there was a man, you know, he was a poor man, and he lived next to a rich man. And he said, that poor man had one sheep, just one little one. And the rich man had so many. But when it came, the rich man was going to have a dinner for someone. And so what did he do? He went over and he took that man's one little sheep. Well, David didn't have to have much more. Right away he understood in that parable, and right away he was deeply convicted. And then there's sometimes we can convey a story. You know, find some in the Bible. They're good. They have some good ones. But I remember when I used to teach with the young children a lot of times, I used to tell them this one. You know, somebody has talked about me, and it's really hurt other people are beginning to take what they say, you know? And so we can confront that person. We can say, do you know, I heard that you've been talking about me. And I think that, you know, it reminds me of a story. There was a woman who had a boy who was always talking about, and sometimes lying, but talking about people and always upset about them and talking, always negative about them. And she said one day, the mother said to him, I want you to go upstairs and take this pillow. And I want you to go to the window upstairs. I want, here, I've cut the pillow top, and I want you to just shake that out the window. And he went up, and he shook all the feathers. Well, you know what happened. Feathers everywhere. And the man and the boy came down, and his mother said, okay, now go out and pick them up. He looked at her. How can I pick them up? They're everywhere. The wind has taken them. And you can say, you know, that's what happens when you talk about people. It goes everywhere and ruins them. You know, we can, if God can give you wisdom and you can have some wisdom yourself, see, some of these things we can approach people, and it won't make them angry as much as when we want to fight with them. Anyhow, another way he did it was he would confront them directly. You know, Jesus was very direct many times. He was a meek one, but he wasn't a soft one, because he could tell them. And so when these men come dragging this poor woman that they caught in adultery, they thought, you know, they were all right. And so they got around him and they were ready to condemn. Lord, what does the Bible, what does the law tell us that we do with this woman? Well, that was to stone her to death, you know. So here was all these men around her. And they expected this man to say, stone her. Instead, he looked at them after he was writing on the ground. He looked at them and he said, you without sin, cast the first stone. Well, boy. What happened to them? They were gone, man. They were out of there. And yet when he talked to the woman that was offended, he said to her, "Don't go and sin no more. Your sin, in other words, your sins forgive. Go and sin no more." So actually, these are some of the biblical ways of confronting. And it may not be that you can think of a story, but maybe you can. Maybe you can think of a parable or something. Start reading some of the parables, and maybe they'll help you out. Anyway, and then we have the fifth method, and that's correcting with a rebuke. You know, today it probably wouldn't be as well taken as it was then. But Peter had been eating with the Gentiles. They were having a good time. And lo and behold, some of the Jews from Jerusalem came in. I imagine Peter almost swallowed his tonsils. And the first thing you knew, he was up. He was over with them. He wasn't going to eat with the Gentiles now. Well, dear old Paul, I believe he was meek, but he was direct. You can't say Paul wasn't direct. And Paul got up and he rebuked Peter. He said, here you were eating with them, and now, and then he went on to talk about being Christians together and so forth. But he rebuked him directly in front of everyone. So, you know, the nice thing today, would you say, take him aside? You know? But after all, what he did in front of everybody. And it was that rebuke that he gave him that made Peter felt it. He understood it. He knew he deserved it. Any honest person would know they deserve it. So sometimes we have to confront people with a rebuke. So I think these are some of the ways that the Bible tells us that they confront it. Now, the goal of our, we were talking about the goal of confronting people. It's not our point to point our pious finger at them and at somebody else's sin, but to point to the truth that correction is necessary. You're not doing it. You see, this is where the difference of our motives come in. And our motives should change our attitudes. My motive is, I want to help this person. I know what they've done hasn't been right, but I'm not out for a pound of blood. And those of you who read Shakespeare knows what I mean. But I'm not out to make them squirm. I'm not out there to rebuke them and to hurt them and to show them that I have enough courage. No, I'm out there saying, my friend or whoever it is, they need to stop this. They need to be able to have the truth told to them. And so, you know, it's wonderful sometimes having, you know, somebody to tell us. There are some that don't know. We're letting a lot of things happen that people aren't even aware of. And when we are able to say, you know, I don't think this is the best way, but I think, and it may be your culture, it may be, but here I think you better do this, you know? So I think we have to understand we need to confront with truth, and we need to act and in the sense that we're not holding it over them, but we're trying to help them. So I like you to try. This is something that we have to do in ourselves. This is something where I have to change my attitudes. I have to have my goal. I'm not out to hurt them. I'm not out to get back. I'm not out for my rights. But I'm out, Lord, I want to help them. I want them to, if I need to be helped, that we can help each other. And I think when we go with this motive, of course our attitude will be different, and we'll go with a different attitude. Now, we want to see that there are really four styles of confronting. Now, the first one is the one I think that many of us live under, and that's the passive approach. Confronting indirectly by using silence. Or they don't really come out with good, they don't come out clearly to say it. They shun it. They don't want any parts of it. They want others to see them as a nice light. So we don't want to confront. That's your passive way. The goal of that is self-protection by avoiding confrontation. You're not protecting the other person many times when you don't do it. You're protecting yourself. And so you can let another person go on and you can let them be lost eternally. But because you yourself, you're afraid to face them. The disadvantage of this, and this is the real disadvantage, and this is why we have so much hurts in our families and in our workplaces and even maybe in the church. This produces no long-term solution. And it leads to bigger problems when you don't confront something. Just brush it under the floor. One time in a board that I was in, we were 8 years with something. I told them that's longer than World War II. You know, these are the kind of things. But we sort of avoided, you know, that type of thing and did it very nicely. And then some reasons we couldn't do it. But anyhow, that's a passive approach. And that's one of the approaches. Another approach is the aggressive one. This is overly reacting, overly attacking the character of the other person. You know, this I think is one of the marriage problems. Yeah, the aggressive one. Some people are passive, actually, and they just keep these problems under, and they just build up and build up and build up. And then there, when we get aggressive, we can be aggressive more with our husband or wife. I really believe that, than you can with other people. And so what we do, we go at each other, and instead of trying to help them to see, help us to see how we can do differently here, what we are doing is we're attacking their person. You're just like your mother. And you know she doesn't care that much to be like her mother. Or you're just sort of hit at each other. I've not been married. I'm not used to doing this. So I don't have many examples. Maybe you all have some. How do you do this? Anybody know? Don't look so pious. You're trying to tell me, no, oh no, Sister Schwartz, not us. We never have it. Well, anyway, you pretty well know what I mean. by the time you're finished, she's not talking to you anymore, and you're not talking to her. And there, I've told this many times, but my aunt, I just saw her this week. She went 6 months without talking to her husband. 6 months. But anyhow, this is the kind of thing many times where they're very aggressive. They use power. They overpower. They threat. They intimidate. If you do this, I'll go home. I like the man that says, when you go, don't come back. Yeah, men, when women do that, when the men do it, say, okay, don't come back. I had a cousin one time, they were just married a little while, and I guess he got a sort of abusive in his language to her. And you have to know my cousin, you just don't do that. And she called my mother, and Margaret, please come and get me. My mother got a truck, went over and got Maria, and took her things over to her mother's house. I guess that's where it was. And so went home, and that night Maria called, Aunt Marg, he come and got me. Moved her back, and they've never separated again. So sometimes these are the kind of things that help. But, you know, these kind of things, as you're trying to gain power and control through anger and force, and you'll never really succeed. You just make bruises. You just hurt each other. You have things that, even though you've made up, there's some things still in the heart that was bruised. And it's sort of covered up. But you resent it many times. You're hurt. So this is the kind of thing with your aggressive type of confrontation. Then the passive aggressive is confronting by covering your ambushes. You know, it's like sarcasm. You the other person as a power player use sarcasm. They snip. They say little hurtful words. They try to get even, but they do it in a way that slight you just enough. They're not fighting with you, but they know, you know, they're making you pretty miserable, and you may be making them pretty miserable. This is what you call the passive aggressive. They wouldn't come to the place where they would fight with you, but boy, can they stab you, and can they hurt you. I don't know anything that I don't like, because I used to do it so much. It's sarcasm. Sarcasm is like a knife, and you just push it in them and just keeps turning it. And it can really, really hurt. So this is what you call the passive aggressive. And they want to avoid a direct response. They don't want to be accountable, but they want to win. And that's their idea is. But the disadvantage is it proves no solution and expresses destructive anger. In indirect ways. And again, I have to say, everything you say is not all forgotten. And it can hurt, and it can be underneath, and it can seethe. This is the problem about not confronting. This thing that what it takes inside of you, and then it just seethes in there, and bitterness comes, and hurt, and even hate. Do you know how many women will say, sometimes they say, I hate my life. I don't like my husband. Why? Because there's so many things sometimes built up inside that has never been able to be healed. So that's one of the reasons why we want to be able to confront. The last one we want to talk about is the assertive approach. This is the one that I feel like really is what we need to sort of set our goal for. And that is confronting by directly affirming the truth. You know, I don't know, but I found out that when I go, because we've been taught that no matter what the problem is, you're at least 10% guilty. You understand what I mean? Oh, not me. You don't know. She's, well, that woman, you have to know her. But most of the time, we're 10% guilty. Maybe how we said it, maybe how we took it, how our attitudes changed, but many times we have a little bit of whatever it was. And I want to tell you, when we will own our little bit, it helps them to face what they did. You know, because this is the assertive. We talk to them in truth. You know, I know. Okay, I had a little trouble with a preacher one time, bless his heart. I told the truth. But I am so, I talk about directly. Sometimes I'm too direct. That's the German in me. Sorry. But anyhow, I'm very direct. And I love the preacher, but I told him what I felt like about the church. We were talking about a specific thing. We're talking about missions. And I said straight to him. Well, afterwards, I felt sort of bad. You know, I'm like that. I felt I meant what I said, but the way I said it. So I wrote him a letter, and I told him, I said, you know, what I said, I really did mean, but the way I said it, I feel like it wasn't right. And I sent him a box of candy. I don't know if you send men candy or not, but anyhow, I sent him a box of candy. But I realized that I was saying the truth, but the way I said it. So sometimes when we have to look at ourselves, and we have to say, we want to, in asserting it, we want to say the truth, but we want to say it in a way that it can be a blessing and not a harm and a hurt. But when we're direct, and when we're the assertive approach, as it says here, we confront by directly affirming the truth that positively change needs to take place. I would have been far better off if I had spoken and I had gotten a parable or a story when I spoke to him, you know? So all of us, we make our mistakes. But this is the kind of thing that when we assert ourselves in the sense that we're going to straighten it out, we're going to do it the right way, you're going to use direct, specific language to express factual information. And you know what? So many times when you will say to them, did you understand what I said? And they'll say, well, yes. What did I mean? Tell me what I meant. And they'll tell you, and it's altogether, it's not the same thing as what you meant. They took it another way. And this happens many times, even with husbands and wives. You know, some men can't express themselves well. Some women can't express themselves well. That's why they tell us in counseling that many times what you should say is, what did I say? And when they tell you back, we do this with children. We're a little afraid with our husbands, but it would be a good idea. But you say, what did I say? And they'll give it back to you. And you say, no, that's not what I meant. I meant this. Oh, I see now. You see, many times this can be very helpful. When we say it, we open it up, we affirm it in very specific language. This presents the facts. And correcting untruths and changing behaviors, this is what you're trying to do. You're trying to correct untruths if even part of it's in you. And trying to, this brings in change behaviors to each other. It's so wonderful when we can have a little problems and then we can clear them up and understand each other, forgive each other, and then it's all gone. And then we're happy ever until the next time. But anyhow, we're happy. You know, it really, really is what the way, not only God's way, it's the best way. It's the way you can be happy. It's the way you can enjoy each other. You know, this is what God wanted. He took two people that's so directly different and allowed them to get married. Have you ever noticed that? You always marry the seemingly the opposite of you. And so then you're like two grinding together. You say, what do you mean by that? That means we're cutting off each other's edges. We're learning together. We're learning and stumbling, and then we're up again learning and trying to bring it all together. And then as we get older, it gets smoother and smoother and smoother. Until as the years go by, you think to yourself, oh, I'm so in joy and so happy with him. Now, you might not be able to say that now, but you can make it that way. You can work on that. Okay, now you say, why should I? When should I? When should I actually confront people? There's a wrong time. You have to be very careful. You don't want to confront somebody when they're angry. You don't want to confront. Let's go on and see which one. When someone's in danger, You're not there saying, I told you so. You shouldn't, you know, get off of there. You know, we do this to our children all the time. Confront them, get them off of the danger, and then confront them. When a relationship is threatened, we don't want to lose relationships. Relationships can be beautiful. It's what life is made of, did you know? We work, we have our jobs, we are very experienced at our jobs, we do a good job. But if there wasn't for relationships, life would be very empty. And that's why you see these people killing people, because they're lonely and their minds become affected and their emotions become enraged over things. And then they go off and kill 20 children, you know? This is the kind of thing, because they lack relationships. When I'm on Facebook and I'm praying for people that have prayer requests on there, so many, I'm lonely. I'm lonely. Pray for me a husband. I haven't seen too many men asking for wives, but most of them are women asking for husbands. But it's because they're really lonely. So when you have a relationship that's being threatened, I think we need not to let our emotions overcome us. But I think you have to stop and think, what does this relationship mean to me? Is it worth losing? Is it worth venting my anger? Is it worth being right? I can be right and there I stand alone for the rest of my life. I have a feeling that many times people who divorce, after a while, they feel, you know, maybe some of that was stupid. Maybe some of it, you know. And so take time to realize that relationship means something to me. I'm not going to lose it. I'm going to keep that relationship. I have learned even in my life that there are some people that by their very tendencies are very controlling. And I have learned that there's a lot of things not to bother to argue with them. My relationship means more. And so I have learned that some things aren't worth arguing over just because I know I'm right. You like that one? Just because we know we're right. But anyhow, I just feel like it's not worth fighting over. You say, well, I got to get my rights. No, you don't have to get your rights. You know, when you have confidence and you know you're right, you don't have to get your rights. I'll let that soak in. No, you say, I must have my... You'll be surprised how much, as you begin to strengthen inside, that you don't have to have your rights. Okay? When division exists within a people, they need confrontation. Now, this one is not easy. I've worked in the church for some... No, I can't remember. 60 years, I guess. And I've met a lot of met a lot of people. And I've seen a lot of different things going on. And sometimes a church can be the hardest place to confront. We don't want to hurt Sister Jones, and we don't want to hurt Brother Smith. And how do we do this? We rush it under the rug, of course. You know that. You know, that's the problem. Many times when we see a friction in the church, you know, actually, I have to give it to Brother Daniel. When we were in the old place, long time ago, and we were having lunch. And you know, you are Chinese people, but you're from different places. Let that sink in. And you are different in your cultures and your understandings and the way you do things. Well, when you have a church with about 3 or 4 different cultures in it, and they're trying to work together, it gets a little hairy sometimes. Well, one time at lunch, they were having politics in Taiwan and China. Well, I don't know. It was all kind of mixed up going on. And Daniel got up and said, okay, in this church, we are not having politics, and we're all Chinese, and we're not having any of this. And you know, I haven't seen any since. Really, truly. I don't know what you do back home or in your little groups, but as far as a church, we've never been bothered with it since. So sometimes Sometimes when you have enough directness, they you faced it. Now, if you let that go, it will fester and it'll get bigger and you'll get closer little clicks and things. That's why we need, when we see divisions, we need somehow to work on them. When somebody sins against you, you need to confront them. This one, I think, is very, very real. You know, I'm trying to think of if it's a sin or not. But when at work sometimes, you'll have people that will push you down so that they can be lifted up. You know? And that's not right. But I feel like sometimes you need to confront and say to them, to the leader or whoever it is, you know, I think maybe this is not good, you know? They're pushing them up and we're pushed down. Maybe we need to talk about this. Or maybe in your marriage, maybe that you, at your work you can't do it. I don't know. I've never had to do that. But maybe in your marriage or in your relationship with others, if they sin against you, I think you need to tell them. Not because it was against you particularly, but because it is a sin. And you have their eternal value in the view. And you want them to know it. And you want them to be helped through it. So that's another time. When you're offended, you say, but if we're Christians, if I'm offended, no, I'm going back to the fact of the way you do these things. I'm offended, you know, why should I allow that to irritate me and to grow in me? And sometimes, many times, they didn't really mean to offend you the way you took it. And it's so much better to say, you know, that what you said really hurt me. Go home and talk about them. Don't go home, let this thing grow in you. Just honest with each other. Oh, you said I lose them. Well, you're going to lose them anyhow, in your own heart, if no other way. So when somebody offends you, let them know, you know, that hurt me. I really appreciate it. It hurts me when you say that, but then I feel better. I realize, and I say, oh, I'm sorry. I really didn't mean it that way. Because some of us are rough, and some of us are sharp. Have you ever met a sharp person? Don't look at me so innocent. You have met a sharp person. and they can hurt you without even trying. They can hurt you. We have one missionary that I tell you, everybody, she's been like a porcupine. Everybody. Thank God she doesn't bother me. Of course, I was a leader, and she couldn't let her bother me much, but every once in a while I have to talk to her, you know? But she's a New Yorker. No, that's an upstate New Yorker. And New Yorkers are sometimes very abrupt. You know, they can be very sharp. And so I've tried to tell the other people, this is just her way. This is just her way. But I think then she's sorry about it after she knows. But anyhow, it's good to get these things cleared out. And when someone else is caught in a sin, we need to let them know. And when others are offended, you know, I think that bothers me more than myself, when people offend others, and it hurts me. You know, I'm sorry today. I wished I had it to do over. But years ago when we were in the old church, I used to have some people that I would eat with. And there was one American man, very nice man. And they don't come anymore, so they were a very nice man. But his wife, bless her heart, when she would come and sit down, she rip him from one end to the other. All of his bad faults, all the bad things he did, you know. And I was so offended to think that she could do that in front of her husband. I wouldn't speak, but I should have told her. I wished I had it over to do over again. I would have told her. You know, this is the kind of thing sometimes when others are offended, maybe we need to step in and say, you know, that's not good. This isn't the place you do that. You know, just being able to, with grace, help them. Well, there's times that we shouldn't. We shouldn't. Oh my, it's 25 after. Anyway, I'll go to the bell. You know, this is better sitting down. Where are you? This is better sitting down. I may go until 2. No, I'm just teasing. Okay. Why? When shouldn't you confront? When confrontation can create not unity, but division. To avoid needless damage, you should not confront. If you know that what you're going to say is going to bring something that, if you're going to confront someone, and it's going to mean that that's going to divide it, then wait. Don't say it. Just wait your time if you can. When you are not the right person to confront. Sometimes we are in other people's businesses. We're confronting for them. No, we confront for ourselves. Others confront for themselves. So when somebody does something, you allow the other person to confront. Sometimes it's not the right time to confront. You know, I remember when they were having the earthquake in China, and those dear people, when they came out of it, they were so, so traumatized that I didn't want our people to confront them with salvation. Doesn't that sound terrible? But it's not. It wasn't time to talk to them about Jesus. It wasn't time to tell them about their sins. It was a time then to empathize and to love and to just let them talk to you, be quiet. This is what I tried to tell those that I was training to go into the hospital there. There's a time that we just don't do it. And when you're not certain of your facts, don't do it. That's a bad one, because you might get yourself in deep trouble. One time there was a lady that somebody told me she died. I told you that one. Went home and told my mother. Of course, my mother, she told the others around. I don't know if they sent her a sympathy car. She didn't die. She was still alive. So don't, if you don't, if you have facts by person, I tell you, you better have facts with what you talk about. And it's best to overlook little minor. Just look over the little minor things. You'll be far better off. Okay? And this one is a good one. When you are doing the same sin as they are, don't confront them. We do. Oh, you shouldn't do that. We tell our children that. You shouldn't do that. That's not right. And then we go tell a lie. You shouldn't do this or that, and then we do something else, you know? This is very serious. And so don't do it when you have the same sin. When your motive, and I think I better finish here. I don't know. Well, I'm going to be working on this a little next week too, so anyway. Motive. Don't go with the wrong motive. Sometimes you may have the right thing, but the wrong motive. That's why God looks at the inward, the motive. Motivation means a lot. It goes along with our attitude. So if you're going for the wrong reason, and your motive isn't pure, and not to benefit the person but to hurt them, don't go. Wait until you can get to the place where you have your motive, and it may be beneficial. Thank you this morning. I praise, and I praise the Lord, because I was a little bit fearful today. Last week I had a very bad spell after I spoke, and I thought it was going to come on again, but I think sitting down has helped me. So thank you for coming, and go have a good dinner. And have a cup of coffee for me. I can't drink coffee anymore. Oh, it's heartbreaking. I've got this nice coffee pot with all these little cups to put in, and I can't even use it anymore. But anyhow, enjoy yourself. Thank you.